Audio Service.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for August 2007. This is issue number 269. I'm Fred Vobe, last name spelled V-O-B-B-E, and I'm the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, that's M-A-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. Telephone number here in the studio is area code 360-382-1957. A subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. and Canadian members is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. To subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. You can also sign up to edxn.com and get your DX Audio Service on your computer or iPod player in stereo. A subscription to edxn is only $15. Just point your browser to http://www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen at Post Office Box 473-251, Aurora, Colorado, 80047-3251 if you want to pay by check. Well, let's toss it over to the AM Switch Department and then to John Bowker. I'll be back with some information about the convention. Then we have Mark Durenberger, of course, Phil Wayne, Ken Oschuck, the whole Hee-Haw gang will be here. So stay tuned for your DX Audio Service.
Thanks again, Fred, and welcome everyone to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for August 2007. First of all, call letter changes. Not too many to report this month. 710 WREM in Monticello, Maine has changed to WCXH. 960 KKJX Klamath Falls, Oregon has made the switch to KLAD. 1490 WESL East St. Louis, Illinois, their new call is WFFX. 1520 WKWH Shelbyville, Indiana, their new call sign is WSVX. And finally, 1600 WAMS Dover, Delaware, their new call WXXY. Construction permits reported on the air this past month, 750 WNDZ Portage, Indiana, their CP for D3, that's directional daytime only, 15,000 watts is on the air. They have added one tower to their array of two, changing their pattern from a kidney shape to a basic circle directed toward 323 degrees. And from Portage, Indiana, that means hello, Chicago. 970 CJYR, Edson, Alberta. The new FM station slated to replace CJYR in Edson has begun testing and will begin simulcasting shortly. The station on 97.3 MHz has an average ERP of 11 kilowatts. 1070 KATQ Plentywood, Montana, their CP to add 50 nighttime watts is on the air. They're now U1, 5,000 watts during the day and 50 watts at night. The application specified 49.5 watts, but the FCC has rounded it up. 1120 KEOR, Catoosa, Oklahoma, CP to move from Atoka on 1110 is on the air with D3, 2,000 watts, daytime only. Remember, D3 is directional during daytime only hours. 1340 KTMM, Grand Junction, Colorado, the CP has been granted to move to the tower of co-owned KJOL 620, and they are now on the air with 1,000 watts, day and night non-directional. Actions KGVY 1080 Tucson, Arizona. The CP has been granted to move from Green Valley with 1,400 watts during the day, non-directional. 1100 WISS Berlin, Wisconsin, recently granted the move to 1100, has now been granted to D3 14,000 watts, daytime only. The new pattern sends their signal to the northeast and southwest with a major null toward Cleveland. 1140 CBI Sydney, Nova Scotia. The CRTC has granted the application of the CBC to construct an FM station on 97.1 MHz with 64.1 kilowatts with the intent to replace CBI 1140. It will continue CBC Radio 1 service to the Sydney area. 1180 KELE Ripley, Ohio. Listen closely to this one. CP has been granted to move to Ripley, Ohio from 1360 in Mountain Grove, Missouri. That's a move about, 500 miles or so. The new facilities are 1,000 watts daytime only, non-directional, with CH critical hours, 1,000 watts too. They'll be using a folded dipole antenna on the tower of WAOL-FM. That antenna site is in Kentucky across the river, approximately 11 miles southwest of Ripley. 1210 WANB Waynesburg, PA. A CP has been granted to move here from 1580, 5,000 watts during the day, 710 watts during critical hours, all non-directional. 1240 WOON Woonsocket, Rhode Island. A CP has been granted to license their special temporary authority facilities as permanent. In 2002, WOON was granted the STA to relocate to the transmitter site of WNRI 1380 as the WOON site was being developed by the city and their tower was to be removed. Their new facilities are the same as the old, 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. 1260 WIYD Palatka, Florida. CP has been granted for U1, 400 watts during the day, 135 watts at night, relocating to the transmitter site of WPLK 800. 1320 WJAS Pittsburgh. CP has been granted for U4, 7,000 watts during the day, 3,300 watts at night. Because they gained 2,000 watts in their day power, they were required to go directional. The new day pattern sends equal lobes toward 050 and 175 degrees. The night pattern remains the same, only smaller than previously. They have lobes at 145, 252, and 352 degrees. WEBO 1330 in Owego, New York. A CP has been granted for 3,500 watts during the day, 36 watts at night, non-directional at a new transmitter location. WEBO currently is operating under an STA with U1, 1,000 watts during the day, 50 watts at night, from a long-wire antenna. 1360 KDJW Amarillo, Texas. CP has been granted for U4, 6,000 watts during the day, 320 watts at night, from five new towers, using five during the day and three at night. 1380 KWJL Rosamond, California. CP has been granted for U5, 1,000 watts during the day, 20 watts at night. Remember, U5 is directional during the daytime only, non-directional at night. They've made a move from Lancaster, California. Their CP for U5, 1,000 watts during the day, 20 watts at night at Lancaster, has been deleted. 1480 WSRC Fair Bluff, North Carolina. Their CP has been granted 10,000 watts during the day, 48 watts at night, all non-directional. 1510 WBSG, San Germán, Puerto Rico. CP has been granted to move from Lajas with U4, 1,000 watts, day and night. 1550 WLOR, Huntsville, Alabama. CP has been granted to relocate their nighttime operation to their day site and reduce night power. When operational, WLOR will become U4, 50,000 watts during the day, and 44 watts at night. 1550 KWBC College Station, Texas. A CP has been granted to move from Navasota with U5, 1,400 watts during the day and 24 watts at night. Three new stations have been granted. Big Horn, Wyoming on 1370. They'll have 10,000 watts during the day and 250 watts at night, directional nighttime only from three towers. The night pattern throws a large lobe at 350 degrees clockwise over to 050 degrees, plus a slender lobe at 122 degrees. 1450, Iola, Texas. CP has been granted for U1, 250 watts day and night. Iola is about 15 miles northeast of Bryan College Station. And 1490, a new station in Bishop, California, has been granted 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. One application has been filed for a new station, that on 1490 in Spring Creek, Nevada. They apply for 250 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night. Stations that have returned to the airwaves over the past month, KNNZ 940, Cedar City, Utah, WXJO 1120, Gordon, Georgia, they're on with oldies, KYRO 1280, Potosi, Missouri, with Country and Western, and KPTO 1440, Pocatello, Idaho. No stations this past month have been reported as going silent. Well, my thanks go out to Sean Axelrod, Wayne Heinen, and Dean McIntyre for items donated this month, plus a big thank you to you for listening. If you have any items for AM Switch or have questions about this month's column, please email me at w_r_hale@sbcglobal.net. That's sbcglobal.net. I look forward to hearing from you. Coming up next, John Bowker with the next installment of the Travelogue.
Well, thanks once again, Bill Hale, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the Travelogue. As you know, this is the program segment where we lock our radios at one dial position. Today, it's going to be at 990 kilohertz, and then we travel across the country to hear what stations are broadcasting on that one frequency. Now, let's see, this is part three of 990. We've come from northern New England all the way down to, down to Knoxville, Tennessee last time, and that brought back some fond memories of the convention of the National Radio Club back in Knoxville, 10, 12, 15 years ago. Gosh, Steve. Well, anyway, we're going to go to the western end of Tennessee now. That's right on the Mississippi River in Memphis, Tennessee, as we begin the August 2007 edition of the DX Audio Service Travelogue.
Yes, I do want to be in that holy number. Full gospel radio from Memphis, KWAM 990 on your dial. The time now is 3 o'clock. And bodily transcription, here is that man of the hour. Tonight is your last night. I don't know about you, but I'll be there tonight. Tonight, the big gospel tent will come down after tonight.
And Linda and I were back in town in 1994, and we picked this up.
We'll have more for you, so you stay with us right here at KWAM Memphis.
KWAM, working for the kingdom in Memphis.
So no, things haven't really changed over the 2 years, but that was 15 years ago, and since then they've joined Westwood One, so they have all the usual talk show hosts, Dr. Laura, and all the rest. I'd love to tell you that's a 10,000-watt station, and it is, except that's only during the daytime. I see the NRC log shows KWAM, yes, 450 watts at night. And next, we're going to move to the southern part of Ohio, and we're going to hear from a city that I'll bet I have mispronounced the name of this city a dozen times over my lifetime.
Playing more of your favorites. This is 990 WJEH AM, Gallup Police, Point Pleasant. Your music memory station.
And no, I'm not going to tell you how I used to mispronounce the name of that city, but I can tell you that I learned early on how to pronounce the U.S. Naval Academy city of Annapolis. And if you know how Gallipolis is spelled, you'll see where my confusion came in. Okay, enough of that. Tell you what. I'll make it up to them by playing you one more ID. This is their jingle package from 2002.
It's about 3 minutes before the top of the hour. Mostly sunny this afternoon, high in the low to mid-60s. APR News is standing by at 2 o'clock.
Okay, 2 o'clock. Now, this next one is one that Linda and I recorded the first time we visited the Akron-Canton area back in 2004 when we were thinking of maybe having an NRC convention up there.
ESPN 990, the countywide leader in sports.
You're listening to AM 990 WTIG Maslin and Canton, the countywide leader in sports.
ESPN Radio Sports Center.
Good morning, I'm Bob Picozzi. Labor Day always means plenty of afternoon baseball.
Oh, and you know, WTIG was not always sports. 10 years earlier, we picked up this recording there.
From Country 99, WTIG Massillon. More of the best country music for Tiger Town.
And we're going to continue our trip north now into Michigan, into Ypsilanti, not far from Ann Arbor, and that's not far from Detroit.
WCM, Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor, Detroit, the Christian music station.
Revival Time, brought to you by your local Assembly of God.
Now, this is kind of an interesting station. The recording you just heard was made by our son, John, in 1992. Clark Ingram was in Ypsilanti in 2002, just 10 years later, to find they had changed their ownership, their call letters, and their programs.
Full-time Catholic radio in Southeast Michigan. This is 990 WDEL Ypsilanti, Detroit, or WGEO.net on the internet.
This is the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Okay, with our dials glued to 990, let's take Mr. Greeley's advice and head west.
It's 12 o'clock at Indiana's favorite music station.
WPRK, I'm C.
And we can bring that ID up to date just a bit from Muncie, Indiana. Well, okay, at least up to date to 2002. This is a 250-watt station during the daytime hours. Their nighttime power is 1 watt.
The very best in Southern gospel music. Stay tuned to 990 AM WLHN, Muncie, Indiana.
Now, Muncie is on the eastern part of Indiana. Down in the south central part, we have a 1,000-watt station in Jasper, Indiana. And yes, that's right, 1,000 watts during the daytime hours, 6 watts at night.
See you in a minute, folks, with our second hour of Open Line Friday. Don't go away.
News and information from people you know and trust. WITC, Jasper Honeybird.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Linda Moore.
Well, well, and wouldn't you know it, if we continue heading west, we come to Illinois. And, in fact, this next 990 station is within 5 miles of the Mississippi. And it's another 1,000-watt station during the daytime hours, and at night, if you're ready for this, it operates with a full 9 watts.
It's under dark and cloudy skies right now. Our temperature is 72 degrees. This is WCAZ, Carthage.
ABC News, I'm Chet Martin.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, will you join me, please, in crossing the Mississippi River? Hurry, we're on the westerly side now. As though we were headed, oh, say, to Boise, Idaho. Well, we're not going to go that far today, but I hope you're coming to Boise. Labor Day weekend, we're going to have a blast out there. It's the first time we've been joining in with another club. The WTFDA will be there. Well, we won't talk about it. We've bent your ear long enough before. Maybe Fred will say a few words in a few minutes. But for right now, I just want to retrace the steps over the years of Mark Strickert and Scott Feibusch, and I'm sure others, who visited Storm Lake, Iowa, with a radio and a recorder running at the same time.
We are now 18 minutes before 9 o'clock.
You're listening to Nice and Easy 990 KAYL Storm Lake.
When you're not around, so loaded with love.
Now we're going to go down into Missouri next, and this is kind of an interesting trip that Linda and I took back at the January of 1991. Now this first idea is kind of brief. Very clearly, the city of license or identity is Monette, Missouri, and they tell you a few things on their program schedule. Listen.
Southwest Missouri's best country is KRMO, Monette, Aurora, Mount Vernon, Cassville. You'll hear the Southwest Missouri Livestock Report at 12:40 p.m.
Okay, nothing too remarkable about that. 2,500 watts in the daytime and something like 50 watts at night. But now, we went back in 1996, 5 years later, to find that they had changed the city of license and seemed a bit more insistent that we listen to their entire program schedule.
You're in tune to KRMO AM 990 Country, serving the Ozarks since 1950. KRMO signal covers over 750,000 people in southwest Missouri, northwest Arkansas, northeast Oklahoma, and southeast Kansas. Located at 990 on your AM dial, KRMO broadcasts with 2,500 watts daytime and 47 watts nighttime. KRMO has a wonderful blend of country music, news, farm news, and sports 24 hours a day. Listen for ABC News at the top of every hour, 24 hours a day, and tune in to Paul Harvey News and Comment at 7:30 a.m., 11:06 a.m., and 2:06 p.m., Monday through Friday. Also Saturday morning at 7:30 a.m. You're in tune to KRMO, AM 990 Country, your hometown station.
We're your hometown favorite 24 hours a day. KRMO, Cassville, Monette, Aurora, and Mount Vernon. It's the top of the hour. Here's ABC News.
And if you missed it, they moved from Monette to Cassville in Missouri. Well, as we go further south along the Mississippi, we come to Louisiana. In fact, we come to the Big Easy. And on one of the very first trips my wife and I took after the kids had all left home, we went to New Orleans just to see what it was all about. 1984.
Uh-oh, time for news. That's the time we got at hand right now. Thank you very much, eh? WNNR AM 99 in New Orleans. The talk of the town. This is Feedback with yours truly, Gus Lewis and Reg Henry.
And here's how that station sounded in 1990.
Of good time rock and roll, WYAT 990 AM New Orleans.
Now, this is an impressive little station. During the daytime hours, it has 1,000 watts to cover the whole city of New Orleans. I can't believe that it does. And at night it goes down to 400 watts at 990 on the dial, and I know that doesn't get more than about 20 or 30 city blocks, I'm sure. But during the early 1990s, they changed from an all-music format to an all-news format. So they're still going. Here's how they sounded in 1994.
More rain is possible in the News 990 New Orleans forecast today and tonight. 50% chance of widely scattered thunderstorms today, 40% tonight, with a high in the mid-80s. WGSO, New Orleans News Station.
Headline News, I'm Chuck Roberts.
Okay, Chuck, and just a quick sample of one of the 990 stations in the Lone Star State.
For AUN News, a service of American Urban Radio Network, I'm Betty Lee.
KZZB-AM, Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange, a station that's different to make a difference, Gospel 990.
Well, Fred, I'm going to let that music lead me out of the travelogue for this month. Let me turn this over to you this time. If there are any updates on the convention in Boise that you want to tell us about, terrific. And then you pass it on to Mark, and all of our days will be complete. So long, everybody. See you next month.
Thanks, John. Let's just say a few words about the 2007 National Radio Club Convention, which is, we need to know if you're going to be coming to the convention. Just simply let your convention host, Frank Aiden, know, and book your room. That's very important so we can have an accurate account of who is coming to the convention. You need to book your room no later than the 12th of August 2007 so we can have an accurate account and you can save some money. So please do so by the 12th of August. Now I'd like to say a few words about the 2008 National Radio Club Convention, which many people have been asking some questions. One of the questions is, what does it take to host a convention? Well, several years ago, the club published a complete set of directions, and it may be just by giving you the basics that it will help you decide if you'd like to host a convention. On the January DX audio service, we asked members what it would take to host a convention, and we've rewritten the instructions to include some thoughtful ideas. The main thrust is to plan events on Saturday of the chosen weekend so that members can leave the hotel and take part in some worthwhile events in the community, while others can stay at the hotel and just simply relax and chat with friends and DXers. Here's the steps that we recommend in planning a convention. 1. The most critical matter is to find a hotel with affordable room rates and with a meeting room that will accommodate 30 to 40 people. Sometimes the room rate can be balanced against a hotel policy of allowing a few extra people to stay in a room at little or no extra cost. 2. A restaurant either in the hotel or virtually next door. In a few cases, we've had a cafeteria or fast food eatery plus a real nice restaurant within an easy walk of the hotel. 3. Selecting dates for the convention has been a recent issue. We know that the weekend just before Labor Day works for many members, but no one has come up with an alternative date along with an offer to be a host. If you're hosting, perhaps you can suggest a different date. 4. For an outside tour, local points of interest have been very popular. A local radio station or transmitter site has often been a draw for some members. We observed, however, that attendees in Culpsville found a nearby Pennsylvania Dutch exhibit of interest, and Akron offered several automotive museums. In fact, a tour that was planned for local radio transmitter sites didn't happen because of other events happening in Akron. 5. Publicity. programming pamphlets, ID badges, and other upfront costs can be handled with a little advanced thinking. Hosts are not expected to stand any expenses for the convention. The National Radio Club Board is committed to helping a host with the details to do everything possible to make this convention happen. Now, did you notice? Nowhere did we specify any geographic limits for the convention. For most of our many years, the annual meeting has been held in the East and the Midwest. But it isn't written in stone that we must stay in our magic little circle. From our survey, we found some interesting facts. There are two types of members when it comes to conventions. Those that attend and those that don't but suggest. Those who have attended conventions preferred the following communities: Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Baltimore, Maryland, Albany, New York, Columbia, South Carolina, Kansas City, Missouri, Chicago, Illinois, Toledo, Ohio, Detroit, Michigan, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Phoenix, Arizona, Kansas City, Missouri, Windsor, Ontario, Perrysburg, Ohio, Swanton, Ohio, Lima, Ohio, small towns of 200,000 or less in Illinois, Iowa, or Nebraska, the state of Wisconsin, Kansas, central U.S., and anything in Georgia, Illinois, or Florida, southern Michigan, northwest Ohio, or north central to northeast Indiana. But members who have never attended a convention preferred the following cities: Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, Denver, Colorado, Lansing, Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Boston, Massachusetts, Halifax, Nova Scotia, Jersey Shore, New Jersey, and there were many others mentioned. Maybe if we would have conventions there, it might allow some members to attend that have never attended a convention before. Now, please do not volunteer someone else. Talk to other members and see if you can put a group together of three or four members to share the burden. But before you think it's a hard task, think about this. I've hosted three conventions all by myself. Several members who are blind have also hosted conventions. And the third point is that you'll be given help and direction. And you'll find that it's not that hard. If you have any questions or would like to volunteer for 2008, please contact John Bowker, B-O-W-K-E-R, at Post Office Box 5192, Sun City Center, Florida, 33571, or email John at jbowker, that's J-B-O-W-K-E-R, at Tampa Bay, all one word, .rr.com. Now here's Mark.
Mark Dernberger here, and it's midsummer in the northern latitudes. And time out for our usual summer potpourri. A mix of short features we hope might make for interesting midsummer listening. Today, we begin by expanding our WHA interview with Wisconsin Public Radio's Randall Davidson, who wrote the book 9XM Calling about WHA Madison. During the original visit, Randall mentioned WHA's sister station, WLBL. We latched onto the fact that apparently that station meant a lot to historian Davidson, and we'll find out why. But first, time out for this message.
Pretzel twists, that's the classic pretzel shape. Extra thin old Dutch pretzel sticks and big crunchy pretzel rods. Now, another snack treat ready to eat is old Dutch popcorn. Those big white fluffy kernels. Oh, I think we're having one of those days, I'm afraid right now, Charlie. Those big white fluffy kernels are irresistible. So fresh and salted just right. Oh, boy, they're great to have on hand for parties and snacks. They're only 19 cents for a big package of Old Dutch ready-to-serve popcorn. Like new? You like new and different snacks? Well, boy, if you do, get Old Dutch Piggy Puffs. They're made from bacon, and they're popped into crispy, crackling puffs. They go great with dips, and there's hot sauce for making special Piggy Pup. These are Piggy Pups.
Now to Randall Davidson and an extension of our Madison chat. Randall, welcome back. We were talking about WHA in Madison, and you mentioned another AM operation of note that appears in your early history. What was the difference between these two?
WHA in Madison is a university-based station. WLBL in Stevens Point, which is the other AM in our network, the other old AM, was started by the Wisconsin Department of Markets. LBL was a 24-hour station until 1928. It was a daytimer after that until 2005. We just, last 2 years ago, got the okay to be on low power. It's 5,000 daytime. I think we go down to about 70 at night. Yeah. They were there to do farm market programming. They were a non-commercial station.
Yep.
And they were owned by the state government. But they were up there in Stevens Point. They were a little bolder in experimentation. They weren't bound by the university and trying to be an educational operation, generally. They went their own way, too, and they carried the Packers, the Green Bay Packers, on
what year do you think?
1933 through 38, the 33 through 38 season.
So there's another first.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, Mr. Davidson sits up straight when he talks about WLBL. You have a soft spot in your heart for that station.
You know, this was the most fun. WLBL, when I started working here, like nobody... It was that one oddball station in the network. The call letters don't conform to our kind of our standard.
And it's that old AM
stuff.
It's
AM, and it was a daytimer. It went off at sundown. There was no real history there. Even the stuff in the broadcasting yearbook is wrong about when it went on the air. And LBL started actually as WPAH. They were on 360 and 485 meters.
Yeah.
The first year they were on.
Right.
And then we're on just solely 360, which is a little bit odd because most of what they were doing was government broadcasting, and they should have been on 485 all day.
Yeah.
But they were doing six shows a day that were about 15 minutes long, and they turned the transmitter off in between them. They'd come on at 8 and do, and each one was a different commodity. So they'd have the butter and cheese price here, and then there'd be egg prices, and then the
futures,
South St. Paul livestock, and then the hay futures, and then the vegetable markets, and... But then they'd fill in with music a little bit, and they started having evening programs where they let people come in from a community. Like, it'd be Clintonville night, or Ripon night, or Oshkosh night.
Wow. What leadership that station must have had.
And it was interesting, when these towns would come to call, this station was heard in all 48 states. This WPAH was 500 watts, and it was on at night. And it was they got telegrams and letters from all 48 states. They had a call from England. It was a very interesting station, but they moved to Stevens Point and became WLBL. They wanted to be WLOL.
That was taken.
Wisconsin Land O' Lakes. No, the Commerce Department said that if you're going to have four call letters, the third one has to be a B until we use them all up. Then you have to use up the C's, and then the D's. That's why a lot of the early call letters like WEAF, the third is an A. But they say, well, maybe we'll take WLBL, because they didn't think they'd get to WLOL until 1930. There's all kinds of stuff that nobody knew. So I thought, I'm going to make it my mission to really chronicle this. And this station is left out of all the chronicles of educational radio. It wasn't owned by a university or a college or a school district. It was a non-commercial AM station, a rarity anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But to not be owned by an educational institution made it extremely rare. So I went and dug into the resources on that. There was a fun story. I called the building that it's in, the transmitter building, is our oldest building. It's the oldest building we still use. It's 1937. It's out in the middle of a field between Stevens Point and Marshfield, Wisconsin. But it isn't staffed full-time, so I had to call our engineers in Rib Mountain, where the building is staffed. And I said, can I get into the Auburndale building someday? He said, sure. I said, well, I'd like to come up. And he said, yeah, I'll meet you there and let you in. I said, is there anything historic in there?
I knew you were thinking that.
And he said, nah. Well, he said, there's that file cabinet full of stuff from the 30s.
Oh.
And I said, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So I went in there, and I drove up to... Before I left, I mentioned to my colleagues in public television, I said, I'm going up to the WLBL transmitter building. And poke around, I said, they got some file cabinet up there full of stuff. Oh, great. They said, can we send a camera crew with you?
Yeah,
and I said, sure. I said, sure, go ahead. And so they met me there and with a camera crew, and a reporter came and a videographer, and they videotaped me opening the file cabinet and pulling out, there was going to be like this Al Capone's vault kind of thing. I was going to find some great relic in
Geraldo.
There.
Geraldo.
And the first thing I pulled out was a memo from one of the transmitter engineers from the 40s asking for time off to get his hernia fixed. So I didn't have a lot of luck there. But the nice thing about it is all the historic documents that I went through there, I cataloged them all, and I got them out of there. And got four big state records boxes of stuff. And there's stuff going back to the earliest thing in there was a very interesting thing. 1932 correspondence about painting the tower. They had two towers in 1932 with a wire between them. And it occurred to someone at WLBL, maybe we should paint those towers in like bright colors. Just for airplanes don't fly into them. And then someone else said, maybe we should check with the federal government and maybe there's some standard. So, you know, and sure enough, there was. But the tower standard in 1932 was black, white, and yellow.
Yeah.
And that must have been very attractive. But here's the bid for painting the towers and how high the bands are supposed to be.
My.
But yeah, WLBL, great story. They had their own band, their own orchestra, the WLBL Northerners, which you could hire them for your dance.
Yeah.
The one thing about WLBL that struck me is that they were trying so many different things, and it was really an early attempt at community radio. They let local people on to do programming. They were playing all kinds of music. They were doing country music in the 30s, which is very early. They call a show called Hillbilly Selections. And then they had all these spoken word programs, Postal Oddities and the Drink More Milk Club, and my favorite, Bicycle Traffic Court.
What?
It was a show on Saturday mornings in the 40s.
This is for traffic violations on a bicycle.
By bicycles. And they apparently drag you into the radio station on Saturday and make you face the judge. On Saturday on the radio.
Court TV.
Kind
Judge
of like,
Judy.
Kind of like that. And I thought, my goodness, that's an interesting topic for a show.
My word. So there is nothing new under the sun.
Evidently not. So I was much impressed by that. And the WLBL story, I'm so proud of. It is a great, great radio story. I would have loved to work there about 1937 or 38. Mm-hmm. It would have been a dynamite radio station to work for.
Dynamite station indeed, and Randall Davidson expressed very nicely the feeling among a lot of us broadcaster editors. We all wish we could have been part of radio during an earlier time. It's a combination of nostalgia and the fact that radio was a better place to be. Well, next, we turn our attention to KKOL Seattle. They're having a bit of dynamite of their own out there on the upper left coast.
We've got a bunch of kilocycles. We got frequency to spell.
You'll recall we told you about this station about a year ago and how they were operating from a ship in the harbor near Seattle waiting for construction of their new 50,000-watt tower site. Well, they got the site built okay, but it's been operating with some fireworks here and there, as we read in this excerpted story from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. We read, in its effort to be more than an afterthought in the competition among Seattle's conservative talk stations, Salem Communications KKOL AM 1300 has boosted its signal from a new transmitter site. But whether the station can remain operating in its new style may depend on whether they can resolve issues involving the 50,000-watt transmitter, located at a site at the Port of Tacoma. After losing its lease on a transmitter site in Harbor Island, KKOL spent several years broadcasting from a ship moored near Alki with a low-power signal that hindered its reach across the region. Eventually, it found a new site for its antenna, signed a 10-year lease with the Port of Tacoma, and last year announced it had gone to full power. But that prompted U.S. Oil and Refining Company to file a complaint with the FCC, saying the transmitter has created a series of problems at its refinery less than a mile away from the towers. Of particular concern, U.S. Oil said, is an electrical charge produced by the transmitters at the refinery's docks that creates a safety hazard when crude oil is unloaded from tankers. The Coast Guard has also weighed in, calling for the FCC to order KKOL to change operations to eliminate the risk of a spark from the station causing an explosion. Salem proposed lowering its power to 47,000 watts, its nighttime rating, at times when U.S. Oil is unloading oil tanker ships. The FCC, in turn, asked that KKOL operate at 25,000 watts during the day and back to 47,000 at night until the issue is resolved. Salem said it has voluntarily complied with that request. And a slightly different spin from a blog called Blatherwatch. We read, KKOL death rays bombard Tacoma Dome, threaten Jehovah's Witnesses. The story goes on to say that KKOL's new 50-kilowatt transmitter at the Port of Tacoma threatened to blow up an urban oil refinery, kill innocent Union dock workers, ruin the Western Washington economy, and endanger U.S. security by hindering fuel supplies to McChord Air Base. Now we learn their big throbber is suspected of electronic interference on nearby public address systems. As time goes on, it appears the only solution might be yet another tower move. But as the area's population density increases, sighting the smoke and poles gets more difficult. That's been from the blog Blatherwatch. As we say on the DX Audio Service,
Stay tuned for further developments.
We got 50,000 watts of goodwill. We can reach out everywhere. We've got an FCC approval just to keep us on the air.
We put the wrap on this broadcast and our Midsummer Madness by turning to some bloopers heard on network radio and elsewhere during the golden age of radio. Listen carefully to these short excerpts and notice how the announcer tried to recover in each case he made a blooper.
Peace talks, there's a glimmer of hope for peace in the Middle East.
Rather serious as it broke diplomatic relations with Jordan.
But a company spokesman denies that the actions have any connections, that is.
Charlie Manson is no longer the bearded hippie leader of a commune family. This morning he's a Clanshaven hippie leader of a commune family. Or rather clean-shaven, I should say.
While striking dock workers vote on a union leader's recommendation to move perishable food goods.
In golf today, Tony Lima shot a 7-under par 64 to win the $57,000 Oklahoma City Open.
There was another embarrassing moment on what I think was the Don McNeil Breakfast Club, at least it sounds like his voice, where he was on the air for Grape Nuts in the morning. This time, when he asked a question of a child, he got an answer that he couldn't recover from.
That little Brenda wishes she had some Grape Nuts right now, don't you?
I don't like Grape Nuts.
Oh! Well, that's all right. Now, that's all right, Brenda. You didn't say anything wrong, because if you don't like them, I'm glad you told me about it. The thing is, if everybody liked them, they wouldn't have me advertising them, because then everybody'd eat them, and there'd be no use trying to get people to try them.
You're getting out of it, but I just let it go.
And finally, in front of a live audience, an announcer tries to read a commercial for a new Hollywood production.
Yes, it happened in Hollywood. Perhaps it's the most ambitious film ever made. Now, it claims a cast of over 50 souls who cavort and carry on in the name of good, clean fun. It happened in Hollywood. It contains a circus act by the name of the Flying Fools. This is not to be laughed at. This is serious. It happened in Hollywood as the true-to-life tale of a recently fired...
Can't be serious.
Geez, I hope you're serious, John. I'm reading this, friends. Not well. It is a motion picture, and everything that I'm telling you about it is based on fact. It happened in Hollywood as the true life tale of a recently fired telephone company operator. She gambles her way through agents, photographers, casting directors, film directors, and producers, until finally reaching her admitted goal, the Academy Awards. It Happened in Hollywood was produced by Jim Buckley, written and directed by Peter Locke, and stars...
Flying.
I can't believe half of that.
Some network moments as we conclude our Midsummer Madness. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days. And until then, for the editors and columnists, good listening, DXers.
And so for Pepto-Bismol and Sunday News Special, this is Walter Klamklyde. Cronkite saying good luck. Good night.
Thanks, Mark. Well, veteran talk show host Art Bell has called it quits again. If three times are a charm, then what is four? Veteran talk show host Art Bell stunned his audience on July 1st with this announcement.
I would like to announce tonight that for the... Actually, I'm not sure how many times it is now. Somebody's counting. That following tonight's broadcast, I am retiring from regular weekend program.
The show stunned many listeners of Coast to Coast AM, a show that Art hosted on the weekends. Some listeners speculated that this was a publicity stunt. Others were just disappointed, as Bell has been described as being the founder of what has become a ratings winner in overnight programming and the only source for paranormal talk. although previous departures from the air were due to problems and tragedy in life, such as the death of his third wife, Ramona, in January of 2006, Bell said that this is a happy retirement.
The reasons actually are stated by nearly everybody, whoever makes such an announcement. Only now, I very clearly understand them in a very personal way. God has blessed me with love in my life. At a time, frankly, when I thought I had lost any reason to live following Mona's death, my wonderful wife, Erin, and now our daughter, Asia.
Bell went on to say that his time would be spent with his new family, and Art also said that since he is of retirement age, he would like to more or less stop and smell the roses and take some time off. Many ham radio operators have noticed that he's been rather silent from the 160 and 80 meter bands, so one has to hope that Art has not retired from ham radio. Ian Punnett will fill in for Art until a replacement is found. Are record companies trying to kill the music? A study says that radio airplay actually drives down record sales. University of Texas at Dallas professor Stan Leibowitz says radio airplay can hurt music sales by as much as 20%. He finds the more time listeners spend tuned to the dial, the less likely they are to buy pre-recorded music. Leibowitz's study comes at a time when record labels have started pushing to nix radio's royalty exemptions. So should labels pay radio to stop playing a record? Here's why the record industry is after radio's wallet. Their sales dropped yet again. According to a Nielsen SoundScan, album sales dropped 15% in the first half of this year. In short, the record industry has definitely seen better days. The good news for labels is that sales of digital tracks increased 49% compared to last year.
It's time for a pattern change. Or at least to flip over your tape for more of the DX audio service.